Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Kelly Wells. I am the host of PWT Talks NXT. We're going to talk NXT for September 21st, 2021. What are the ratings of this show going to be? I'm very, very excited to see that. I got a lot. A few weeks ago, I said the sky was not falling, and I'm not so sure anymore. I expect some growing pains when a whole bunch of people who maybe should not be on TV yet are on TV. I didn't expect some of the specific idiocy creatively that we got tonight. So I don't know. It's going to be, I don't know. At times I was losing my mind during the show tonight, but we'll see if I'm a little lighter on it as we go back through some of it. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, or you can call us 515-605-9345. I am going to start with some emails because we got four emails, and three of them are big picture. Going to be a lot of big picture stuff. Last week there was a lot more, but I'm going to start with those three, and then we will move on to main event time. Zach Barber says, gentlemen, I have to disagree with y'all about NXT's new look. Between the color scheme and brightness, which I think is an overcorrection from the dark NXT and the new seating arrangements, I expected to hear a voiceover at the end of the show tell me that NXT 2.0 has been filmed before a live studio audience at Nickelodeon Studios, Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida. Seriously, the aesthetic was straight up double there. All that was missing was Mark Summers and some slime. Add that to the new talent, which amounted to the 21st century version of the not ready for primetime players, to borrow a phrase from Saturday Night Live, and I think there could be trouble on the horizon. USA is paying WWE tens of millions of dollars for a hybrid show with up-and-comers mixed with talent with star power that's going to bring in ratings, not a bunch of guys and gals that are greener than goose shit learning how to wrestle on a set that looks like it belongs on Nickelodeon on Saturday afternoon in 1992. Do you think there's going to be backlash from the network once NXT's numbers start tanking because people don't want to watch wrestling school? Zach in Texas. Okay, lots here. Let me get this out of the way first. I don't think it looks anything like Nickelodeon. It doesn't matter how much the echo chamber keeps repeating that. I literally never would have thought of it. That is when I watched Nickelodeon, and I don't think it looks like that. I do like the aesthetic, and I do like it better than the black and gold. Otherwise, I am unfortunately on board with what you're saying. I think that people are going to reject this. We know that already. I was talking to the guys before the show about the number of people that are usually listening in live on this show, and it is way less this week as we go into this era, although we've picked up a couple since we started. But yes, I think there will be backlash from USA. They didn't pay for this show, and they're going hard into this. And I don't know how much these suits watch wrestling and what they really know, and like if they even can tell good from bad. But if they watched this, they would see a lot of really, really shaky talent on screen. There's a lot of stuff that just is not, that just is not ready. And it's funny you say the not ready for primetime players, Zach, because I thought that same thing over and over when I was watching this show. I really, at times tonight, I thought the aesthetic was the only thing I liked about tonight's show, because there was some shaky stuff, and some of these directions are very bizarre. I also think, though, that we are in exposition hell, and when we settle a little bit, it could be a little better. But if we're going to frame guys like Gacy as like hated heels because he likes people, or if we're going to frame Zion Quinn as a babyface because he assaulted a guy who wanted to go through a door first, I don't know. This might get stupid in a rush. Let me read the other two emails, and then I'll throw to my dudes. This is from, let's go to Steven Marufi. Hey guys, shouldn't this really be NXT 4.0? 1.0 was the reality contest with Daniel Bryan's season, the women's season with AJ Lee and Caitlin, and some other men's seasons. Then they kind of drifted into 2.0 with a normal kind of show that wasn't contest-based, just normal storylines that filmed before Raw or SmackDown. I was at a taping where Johnny Curtis pre-Fandango and Maxine chloroformed Matt Stryker and threw him in a crate. 3.0, the Full Sail era, so the current rebrand could be 4.0, just adding in my 2.0 cents. Love the show. Steven from Brooklyn, New York. P.S. Looking at old stuff on Peacock, I find it hilarious. You can see Gargano in the background of a thumbnail of the original contest season. He also sent a picture of the thumbnail, and Gargano couldn't look worse in it. It's really bad. It's funny because you could break the Full Sail era into a couple of different rebrands even before this rebrand, because it changed wildly a couple of times. This is a silly thing to call 2.0, but that's how they wanted to brand it, and they wanted to brand the hell out of it because they won't stop saying it. David Podnar says, hello, everyone. Starting tonight fast with a full ring and keeping up a frantic pace for the start of the show. I'm glad at least they are introducing people, since more than half the roster seems new. Tonight feels like the real new start, as most of the people in focus weren't on TV just a bit ago. Along for the ride, Dave Podnar. I like when Dave emails, because no matter how bad I'm feeling, he's pro. He's on board. So I'm going to need you more than ever, Dave. Tom Stelp, who are you?
What? Yeah. Oh, hey, yes. I'm at Tom Stelp on Twitter. And, man, I was going to work all this stuff into my intro anyway. I didn't realize that I was going to be saying it as a rebuttal to a bunch of emails. But, like, I went into this show excited. Like, for the first time in recent memory, in longer than recent memory, covering this program and staying up to do a podcast about it afterwards doesn't feel like work. And I was wondering if, like, yes, I was already positive about it last week, and I was already framing it in my mind positively and like long-awaited changes before last week. But I was wondering if going into this week, you know, 7 days removed, the vitriol surrounding it was going to calm down, or if the phrase that you used, the echo chamber, was going to keep it up. And that's just me coming from my perspective of thinking that these changes are long needed and good so far. I will be quite critical of tonight's program, but Not Ready for Primetime Players is what I want from NXT. I'm only speaking subjectively here. I think NXT has been so cool throughout the years because we get to scout from our couches. That's the novelty of it, and here we are finally doing that again. There were periods during the, you know, going up against AEW and just completely tearing apart what NXT was to try to remain competitive, when I thought the show was so bad that I don't want to go as far as to say I was hopeful, because I didn't really think it was going to happen, but when I saw the reports that they wanted to do an NXT Evolve show to be the developmental for the former developmental show, I was like, okay, if they do that, maybe I can just send an email to Wade and be like, dude, can I switch what I'm covering? Because this show is just unbearable right now. And finally, we have what is basically NXT Evolve, back to what got me watching in the first place, with a friendly blend of what people had latched onto, the ones who were watching recently and actually liking it more. And I think they're handling that fine. You'll probably hear the term Han Solo rub out of me a lot. That's the, you know, the Force Awakens reference, where, you know, we see Rey at the control panel of the Millennium Falcon, and without Han Solo there, fans are going to be like, oh man, she doesn't belong. But Harrison Ford is literally sitting right there going like, oh, hey, you're pretty good at this, so we accept it. And so there are a lot of Han Solo rubs going on here. And I think one of the most notable things was that when the show opened, Beth Phoenix looks right into the camera and says, you are getting a glimpse of the future. The future is now is gone. Now it's you are getting a glimpse of the future. That's not the branding, but that's what she said. That is completely different phrasing, and that's what I've been missing. It's what I've been wanting. So yeah, this show tonight, this episode tonight was really rocky. But I appreciate seeing where these people are at. It wasn't all a bed of roses in the days that we remember so fondly. But, you know, we got to see Leo Kruger and Bo Dallas and Becky Lynch. You know, remember Becky Lynch's first match? It sucked. But we all saw it, and we're cooler because we saw Becky Lynch's first match on TV. And here we are finally back to that point. So I'm excited, and yeah, I'll just cut myself off there because I don't want to sound like I'm dissing the emailers. I really appreciate your emails, and the alternate perspectives are keeping me tempered on it. I don't know, keeping me realistic about it maybe. But then I see the Nickelodeon comparison, and I'm just like, come on, what are you? Are we watching different programs here? What's going on?
I was excited about this too, and it's interesting that all the things I disliked about this are not like that it's developmental. I dislike this because creatively it was dead on arrival. It was just a mess creatively. And there's too many things happening. There's so many lines of script in my notes. And at one point my biggest question was, does brandy mix with Coca-Cola? And I'll find that out during the show, and I'll let you know. So let's go to another guy who benefits huge from the Han Solo rub, because he does a podcast with me and Tom, Nate Lindberg. What did you think?
Hey, I've been champing at something I learned from you, Kelly. Champing at the bit to start actually like talking here because, yeah, I guess it's still Nate heel turn time. So I'm going to go back to the first emailer here, which was, I think, was it Zach Barber? Yeah, Zach Barber. So I basically, this is basically what I was saying last week. You know, I mean, I was on board. I mean, I'm not on board. I was basically with Zach Barber here. I hated the rebrand. I hated everything about it. I said from the bat it looked like Nickelodeon. And about that echo chamber comment, I thought that on my own. And like three other people that I've just shown this to, without, they're not even wrestling fans, literally have said to me, that looks like it's 90s Nickelodeon. So I don't necessarily know if it's an echo chamber thing. It's certainly invoking vibes of the 90s, in not just wrestling fans, but in non-wrestling fans too. They're just kind of like looking at this as a thing. I don't like it. I don't like the new vibe. I don't like the new look. I guess this week it kind of grew on me a little bit because I guess I'm just kind of like, well, this is what we got. I have to admit, I don't mind the stage area at all. Actually, I think the stage is pretty cool. You know, the Titantron or whatever they used to call it. Now I don't think they call it that anymore. That's cool. But the rest of the arena I still don't like. I don't like the aesthetic. I don't like the colors. Yeah. I'm a little nervous. I said this last week. I'm nervous about the show. I don't think that this is the general show that people are going to want to watch. We talked about that last week too, and that's not the point. That's not what they're trying to do here. I get that. But it's such a vast departure from the norm of NXT. Even how different NXT was just, you know, in this COVID era, right? It's so different than what we are all used to. I really, even though, like, you know, I know, you know, Tom, like, you're on board, this is what you're looking for, and that's totally cool. I just don't think that's what the general audience is going to look for. I think people are going to stop watching, and I think, you know, USA Network is probably going to be upset, kind of talking into you know, another one of these emails here. They did not pay for, I liked what Zach said. They didn't pay to watch Wrestling School. You know, if like the original NXT, well, I say the original NXT, the original Full Sail NXT, that was what it was supposed to be. And when you tuned in, you kind of knew that. It wasn't like they took something that you liked and stripped it down and rebranded it into developmental. So I think there's a lot of, I think there's some resentment there from people. I know there is for me a little bit. You know, we talked about it last week. You know, wrestling is a safety blanket for people, and NXT has been that safety blanket for me for years. And it's now it's different and it's not. So I think there's definitely some resentment there from people just in the overall look of it. Now that might change over time. People may just grow with it in whatever, but the content of the show is also so vastly different. You know, we're not used to seeing what, 4 squash matches in a row on NXT. It's, which is okay. It's fine. And again, in the developmental world and, you know, kind of original Full Sail era, that's what we were getting. But it's such a vast departure. I'm really wondering what the next like 6 weeks are going to bring. You know, last week I'm not much of a ratings guy, but I looked at the ratings, you know, going into, coming into tonight, what the ratings were for last week. And I know they were up, like it was like 28% or something overall, that they were certainly up comparatively to, before the rebrand. I'm wondering how it's going to be tonight. And if people wound up tapering off as the show went on, as you know, we just kind of got squash after squash after squash. I'm again not going to keep just kind of droning on and on about it here. We'll kind of get into some other stuff too. But I'm not as high on this. I want to be. I want to be optimistic about it. And I would love to see new people on their journeys here. Like, you know, kind of like what Tom's saying, like, I'm totally all for that as well. Like that's part of wrestling is, you know, wrestling is a revolving door of characters. So that's always a good thing. But I think too much too quick is might be a little too much too quick. So yeah, we'll keep talking about it as the show goes on.
I do agree with you. I'm approaching what I said purely subjectively, that like I want, quote, not ready for primetime players. And I do like using that SNL phrase here. That was a good one from Zach. But so I agree that while that may be what I want, I'm concerned about the ratings, while also selfishly hoping that, you know, like it gets moved to Peacock or something. But Nate, is that where you're also, are you looking at this purely objectively, or do you also watch 4 squashes and you're just like, ah, this isn't the program I want to see? I'm genuinely curious.
I don't think it's going to be a program I'm going to want to watch week to week to week. Like right now, like I'm all for a squash, you know, like, you know, old school storytelling, building up, you know, whether it be a new guy or a monster, whatever story you're trying to tell, build that character up through squash matches. I'm cool with that. I don't want to watch 4 of them every week. So I want them to switch it up a little bit. I'm cool with them using that, you know, and using that trope more often than they have been or throwing it in more often. But that's, I don't know, that's kind of, it gets boring after a while. And with how high, so NXT, even though I know, you know, we haven't necessarily liked the breakneck pace of NXT, that, I mean, I think overall people have liked that. So kind of going from that breakneck pace, you know, high energy, where there was a lot of storyline, there was a lot of story development, where a lot of things mattered. Now, granted, this is a rebrand, so and there's a lot of stories that are just starting. I get that. But I don't know if, I know that personally, I'm not going to want to see that many squashes every week. I don't know if general audience is going to find that entertaining 10 weeks down the road.
I don't know either. I would absolutely watch 4 to 12 squashes every week.
Yeah, but you're weird.
A little boring to recap. I am weird. But yeah, I would absolutely watch that many. I was already annoyed that I didn't get to watch a squash by the Roman Coliseum brothers. What are their names?
The salad dressing bros.
See, like I wouldn't necessarily
the Scott
care.
Stapp bros.
I wouldn't necessarily mind if there was a show like if NXT, like, and I'm not advocating for this whatsoever, but say NXT had 2 shows. There's now a second show, and there was one show that, you know, it was like Sunday Night Heat or whatever, and there that was all squash matches and whatever. And then the main show had more storytelling and longer matches. I'd be all for that. But I don't want to watch, like, the main wrestling show that I watch. Like, I don't want to say I want it to be a more no, I don't want it to be more sports entertainment-y, but I want it to be more like what we had with NXT, more storytelling, long-term storytelling, not necessarily with the COVID era, but even a little bit more towards that than what we've got in the past couple of weeks, you know, the kind of COVID era than we're getting is more my, where I would like to see like my safety blanket wrestling. I don't necessarily want to see this be its own brand, and I know that's not what they're doing anymore. So I don't know. I guess it's a bit of a, the whole thing is a bit of a letdown. It's a bit of a disappointment for me because going from being a brand back to developmental, and I kind of, I guess, grew to like that brand. I'm still on board with developmental, and I get down with that. I'm fine with that, and I am excited to watch it. Don't get me wrong, and see these guys come up, guys and girls come up, but it's also taking away that show that I've gone to, you know, every week. That's my one wrestling show. It's not like I'm watching Raw, SmackDown all the time. I've started to watch AEW a little bit more. That I've actually watched the past few weeks. But yeah, squash after squash after squash is not what I want to see in like that main product that I focus on.
Welcome to my entire version. Childhood, because that's what wrestling
yeah.
was.
Yep.
That is true. That is true.
We need NXT version 2.0.1 for Nate here. And you know what, on that reminds me, I meant to follow up on, yeah, like you could slice it different ways. This could be like NXT version 5, but that doesn't send the signal. They're sending a signal. 2.0 sends that signal like, hey, this is refreshed. And for that reason, I do not mind it.
Yeah, I don't mind it, except for the fact that they keep saying it. That could go away. That should have been a one-weeker or maybe zero-weeker.
Did they or did they not go out before the show and coach the crowd that this is the new champ?
Absolutely.
Oh,
they had to have. Yeah, because those idiots chanting 2.0 should all punch themselves in the taint. but yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
I was expecting face and not taint. You got me.
I've been trying to work that in for months. It hit me. Nate did say what I've also been thinking, which is like what's going to make this so hard for people, this transition, is that they didn't just see the need for developmental because they lost it and make developmental again. They killed an existing brand that had become something way, way different. And basically the closest thing to a consistent good show that WWE produced over the past 5 to 7 years. And it had its ups and downs, but was a consistently good wrestling show for a lot of that time. And that show's dead. It may as well have been canceled because it's gone.
This feels like season 9 of Scrubs.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. That's pretty brutal.
That's what it feels like to me, man.
I've tried to revisit. Yeah, well, you know, actually, that is an incredible comparison because they tried to relaunch with a whole new cast, and then closer and closer to production, they were like, oh, but people are going to miss Zach Braff. We should bring him back to do a guest spot. Oh, but we really like having Zach Braff around too, so let's have him. Yeah. So actually, that is an incredibly good comparison, and they went with the brighter color scheme and the new sets and everything. But you know, Dr. Cox and Turk are still around, even though their relationship has to be different since the cast dynamic is different. But that makes sense. I was going to say like, oh well, you know, this show NXT replaced NXT the way that Kelly's saying it did. I mean, that's the same thing that happened to WWE ECW with the first incarnation of NXT, although the difference is that that show, by all accounts, was not very good.
I saw every episode of WWE ECW. I jumped on early because I was like, I just want to watch a short wrestling show. And because I was like, I'm not able to fit. I had small children at the time. And I couldn't fit a long wrestling show in anymore. And I was like, and I kind of like these fringe things that feel a little more punk rock. I just, that's the way I like things. And certainly it became the establishment in a rush, but it was so easy to digest. And maybe that was because it sucked in a lot of ways, but they were constantly trying out new guys. And that I loved. And that's my approach to music as well. I never turn on stations that are like the rock music that I grew up with, that all the people my age still listen to. Like, I never turn on comfortable music ever. I will only turn on a station if I've got a chance to, most of the time, hear a song I haven't heard. That's my approach. But WWE CW, it was pretty bad. But, oh, man, there was a 15-minute Iron Man match between Jimmy Wang Yang and Shannon Moore and The Miz and Morrison. And I'm not sad I saw it because it was freaking awesome. In fact, those two teams had a feud and it was all awesome. Okay. Well, we took a weird left turn after I said we weren't going to go long. I mean, Nate's right. There was a lot of squash matches on this show. The third longest match out of seven was Cameron Grimes versus Joe Gacy.
Let's talk. I love it when you say I'm right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know.
I just have to point it out when you say it. It just makes me feel good.
Believe
what
me,
were the total wrestling minutes?
I die inside when I say it. I'm like, oh. The total
like
wrestling
something.
29:56.
Holy shit.
Yes,
wow.
Very small number. And keep in mind that two of these matches went to commercial and the split screen deal seems to be over. So there was like 6 minutes of that 30 that weren't on TV, 6 to 8 minutes. Got a commercial break during the only two longish matches. And I guess the main was long even by a lot of weeks in the NXT that we recently lost. The longest match would be about 12, 13 minutes. And your main event, Tommaso Ciampa and Bron Breakker defeating Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland in 12 minutes and 24 seconds when Bron Breakker pins Ridge Holland. They're not shying away from Bron Breakker being who he is, but they won't quite explicitly state it. Like last week they said dogface gremlin, and then this week when he did the Steiner recliner, Beth called it a recliner as if there are other brands and other types of recliner than Steiner. There aren't. He was doing a Steiner recliner and the crowd loved the fact that he did the Steiner recliner, by the way. I like how smooth and competent Bron Breakker is. I like most of the things about him other than his name, and somebody high ranking must have named Bron Breakker, because otherwise that name doesn't survive 1 week. It is horseshit. It's the worst. But what they're doing with he and Ciampa is pretty decent. I guess we also have to work in that long, as many things went on this show. My first line of script is the first 15 minutes of show. I said Ciampa and kids. Breakker than Dunn and Holland. So everyone's brawling in the ring, established and young guys. And it ends up with Ciampa and Breakker in the ring and they clear the ring of Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland. But somebody didn't get the timing on this right, because then they cut to the women fighting in the back. And then we go back to the guys and they have Ciampa and Breakker clear the ring of Dunn and Holland again. Like, they basically repeated the spot, which they didn't have to do. They could have just gone back to Ciampa and Breakker in the ring. So they share this moment, and Breakker makes a tag team match. And I think it was probably partially to tease, hey, these guys could feud. Everyone knows this match is going to go down. We don't know when, and we don't know what the circumstances will be. The biggest question now is, does Brandy mix with Coca-Cola? But the other one is, does Bron Breakker turn heel before he fights Tommaso Ciampa. And I think that's actually one of the more compelling questions right now on the brand. So Breakker makes the tag match. They have the match. Breakker pins Holland after his finisher. And I'm sorry if it had a name, but I don't know it yet. And Ciampa and Breakker have a moment, but Breakker does take a good long look at Goldie. He wants to be champ. Insofar that they had to take one of these guys and put them in the main event scene, it feels like they took the right one because he's smoother and more polished than just any of these guys. So I'm interested in everything they do with Bron Breakker, especially when they finally give him a new name. Tom?
Yes, I am very, very interested in what they do with Bron Breakker. However, I will say that for his backstage interview, my only note is I like this guy when he shuts his mouth. His talking ain't good. While at the same time, I feel like the row of new guys that were lined up behind Ciampa, which was very, very stagey, but I'm going to give it a light pass. A light pass, because, man, it was so stagey. But it conveys the generational visual. It's such an easy message to the audience visually that is right in line with what Ciampa is doing. This felt like one of his post-house show, post-taping promos when he was in the main event and he stayed out to hype up the brand. And in this case, he's saying so many words to basically be like, hey, guys, please don't boo Briggs and Jensen just because they're new. Please don't boo Von Wagner just because he's new. That was basically the whole thing. What I especially didn't like about this was that once the cavalcade of interruptions and rebuttals started happening, each new guy that spoke, Gacy, Jones, maybe it was just Gacy and Jones, but they got cut off way too quickly. And their lines, they barely had anything to work with. It's almost like the line was given as like, this is what you're going to start saying so you can be interrupted by the more experienced guy. And I would have liked to see them have their hands held a little bit less, especially, you know, they picked two guys who have gotten plenty of reps. So it wasn't like they were asking Brooks Jensen, Ben Buchanan to pick up the mic and do whatever he does with it. I guess we did get a little bit of a segment of that later that we'll get to. But then we get to the main event, and yeah, I enjoyed it because I'm getting to get a read on this Breakker kid. But it is clear that he needs a lot of guidance out there. It felt like he and Ridge Holland were having an open conversation for a lot of the match. And it was especially obvious during the cover. And I'm sure a lot of people caught that, but I definitely saw the communication throughout the match to a greater extent than you do in matches where somebody in Breakker's position knows more of what they're doing. But when he is told what to do, whether the audience can hear it or not, he executes fairly well. I mean, you know, at least for the position that he's not the position that he's in, but at least for his second week on TV, I mean, you could do a hell of a lot worse than what he's given you. So I think I'm definitely optimistic about where he's at. And yeah, the feud with Ciampa, I hadn't thought about the potential for a heel turn, which I don't know. I guess that doesn't really counteract what Ciampa's goals were with the, like reading between the lines, what his goals were with the opening promo. Like, hey, don't boo these guys just because they're new. But yeah, that could really help. I think I might give a green light to a Breakker heel turn. That could go real well. But I think because we're in a refresh of NXT, we are looking at Ciampa as the safety blanket, and I mean, that's deliberate. That is exactly what he is here. And so it does lend intrigue even to a guy that we've only seen on 2 weeks of television. Like, are they going to move the belt? Whereas usually the first challenger after a new, the first challenger of a title run is just like, oh, okay, they're definitely not winning this. But this one raises your eyebrow a bit.
Nathaniel Breakker.
Oh, Anyway, Bron Breakker, as far as I'm concerned, like, I'm okay with him. I'm okay with what he's doing in the ring. You know, like Tom said, it's clear that he does need some, some guidance and things out there, but, you know, obviously he's still very new to the business. I'm okay with that. I can kind of give him a bit of a buy on that. It's the name. The name is terrible. It's like Chili McFreeze bad. Like, it should never have been a thing, especially spelled the way it is. Now, granted, I get his name is Bronson, right? So that's whatever, B-R-O-N. But after Braun Strowman, it looks weird. It just looks like, you look at it and it just looks weird. I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like the two K's and Breakker. The whole name is terrible. Rex Steiner is awesome. It goes to his lineage. I mean, I get it. They probably don't want to call out the Steiner thing. It might even be a copyright thing. I'm wondering if, you know, the Steiner brothers own the copyright on Steiner and they can't use it for some reason. I don't know. They got to do something with that name, because there's Randy Orton, John Cena, Stone Cold Steve Austin, like, these are all cool names. Like, do you really want to wear a t-shirt that says Bron Breakker on it? Right. Or anything like it just, like, yeah, it's weird. I'm not a fan. As far as the match went, match is concerned, I did enjoy the match. It was fast paced. I liked the way that Breakker and Holland seemed to definitely have some decent chemistry together, even though, you know, a little bit of talking there. I'm really wondering how they're going to position this match between eventual supposed match between Ciampa and Breakker. If it's going to be for the title, I'm almost assuming it's going to be for the title. I can't imagine they pull the trigger and put the belt on him, but I don't know. It's going to be a strange build. It's going to be an interesting build. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot more to say on it. I'm still just kind of digesting most of these changes, I think, at this point.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nathaniel McFreeze. I think that they're working.
I like that better than Breakker.
I think after I did Nathaniel Breakker, I'm just going to call him his first name and then the last name of one of the guys in every match. But then I realized at some point I was going to have to call you Nathan Jones, and I can't do that to you.
You wouldn't be calling me the wrong first name then at that point, anyway. Nathaniel's not my name.
Don't do this to me, Nate, Nathan, Nathaniel. Don't ruin it. I don't know where I was going to go with it.
I don't know
what Braun's doing. You know what? I just want to say, God, he's got a great belly to belly. Really, really good. So looking forward to seeing more of that. So let's go to some other matches. I guess we'll go to the only other long one. Kushida versus Roderick Strong. This for the Cruiserweight Championship. This went 8:59. This was weird in that Kushida's – they put him through another segment of just being an afterthought. And he just, like, he wasn't treated like somebody who was going to even have any chance of winning this match. And Roddy, I get that a championship kind of justifies this being a large group. Man, I feel like I've seen all that Roddy has to offer. I really just have. And I've liked so much of him. I liked his North American Championship reign because he was having good matches with every single type of opponent, and that's great. I just think that he's kind of played out for me. On the upside, I got a chance to see the Creed brothers and Ivy Nile. I think I'm going to like her. Like, I could be totally wrong about this, but something about her says that I'm going to really like her no BS style. They all got involved. This went 8:59, if I didn't say that already. This wasn't a bad match exactly, but the end game of it, I thought, was really bad. You don't have to protect your referee, but if you make him look like this much of a buffoon, it actually kind of reflects badly on the brand and not just the referee, and isn't a good thing for the heel. Like, the heels bring out 2012 different guys, and the ref's like, you know who I'm going to look at? Anyone else but all the people that are dealing with Kushida right now. So it was pretty rough. And the ref, I think it was Brewer, gave them a lot of openings. And it took a couple times before they were like, oh, this is the moment. This is when this happens. But anyway, Roderick Strong, your new Cruiserweight champion, immediately challenged by Grayson Waller. So I don't know if they're going to keep doing the thing with Waller and Drake Maverick. Waller made this challenge, and Diamond Mine, I would say rightfully, said that he shouldn't be stepping on the moment for Roderick Strong, although they did all that heelish stuff. So whatever. Did Waller show up one time later in the show? He did, but he wasn't the star of the segment, so we'll save that one. We've got a new Cruiserweight champion, Nate.
We do have a new Cruiserweight champion in Roderick Strong. Now, this is something that I kind of expected that was going to happen really since Diamond Mine was formed. Your rumors kind of started swarming around about Diamond Mine really just being there to enhance, well, not just really being there, you know, its sole purpose, I guess, is, or biggest purpose anyway, was to enhance the Cruiserweight division and get the title on Roderick Strong to do that. So I was kind of expecting that. It's weird because Kushida's reign, it seemed to me like it's just been a cup of coffee, but I looked it up and it was like 155, 57 days, something like that. Which surprised me. It didn't seem
When you're never on TV,
right?
Like, it hasn't been that long.
Yeah. And I mean, even, I think it was Barrett made a comment to that, you know, like, now at least we have a fighting champion. You just kind of never saw him. But granted, you know, he was dealing with COVID and things like that for a bit, but still, we still really never saw him on TV. But yeah, you know, I'm cool with seeing the belt on Roderick Strong, especially if we are going to see it and you see some more of Diamond Mine kind of around the title. Roderick Strong, to me, like, you know, you said it a few minutes ago, like, you've kind of seen everything Roddy has to offer. I don't dislike Roderick Strong, but he's not a top guy. He's like we keep saying, he's that guy that's always going to go out and he's going to give you a great match. But he doesn't come across the top guy, and they're trying to push him as the top guy, at least in Diamond Mine. And to me, it almost seems too forced. He doesn't seem like he just naturally fits in that role. Like the Creed brothers, for example, they naturally fit into the role of that silent enforcer, you know, and Roddy just doesn't naturally play that role, which is fine. You know, that's not a diss on him or anything. It's just not a good, I don't think it's a good fit. That said, I think he's doing a halfway decent job with it, with what he's got and the way he can do it. I'm not like overly excited to see Diamond Mine, especially Roddy every week. Creed Brothers, absolutely. But not necessarily, Roddy. And Ivy, I'm thinking I'm probably going to like her too. I really want to see what she's got in the ring. But I think I am going to like her. She's got a great look. She looks like she really belongs with Diamond Mine. As far as the Grayson Waller thing, a whole bunch of new talent, things like that. I like the kid. I thought he was pretty good on the mic. A couple of his comeback, like, when Bivens and Strong started talking, he's like, oh, you got to consult with daddy however he phrased it. You know, it was cool. It was like just, it almost seemed like it was off the cuff. Probably wasn't, but it kind of seemed like it might've been. And just the overall presentation of his character so far, I've liked. The Drake Maverick stuff, I don't know. We started seeing him on the main roster in the 24/7 division again. So I don't know if we're going to kind of see him more on the main roster. I'm kind of concerned about him and keeping his job at this point again, especially where he was almost cut last year and kind of worked his way back into a job. But I don't know. Waller at least mentioned Maverick tonight in the promo. So at least there's still sort of acknowledgement that two of them are still together. I feel like if they were going to rip them apart, he wouldn't have even mentioned his partner, Drake Maverick. He just would have came out and stated his intent to go after the title. So yeah, I'm okay with it. It was very predictable for me. I really didn't see Roddy losing this, and if he did, I figured it was going to be, you know, some sort of a interference type of a loss, and you know, he'd win it at the next like big show or next week or even. But I think this is the way they needed to do it. All of Diamond Mine got involved during the match, so it kind of builds some added heat for them. You know, I don't think really a lot of people, you know, I mean, obviously you don't want to see the babyface lose, right? So kind of get some added heat for him there and some added heat for Diamond Mine. Overall, like I said, I'm okay with it. But I just want more out of Roddy, and I don't know if he's capable of producing what I think they either want out of him or what they need out of him to make this success that they might want it to be, or at least in my perception anyway, the success that I'd like to see it be.
I didn't want to bring this up anymore, but like, I'm still so annoyed that they got rid of Tyler Rust that it cast the pall over every single Diamond Mine segment to me. Like, it's still for me the worst of all the firing. It just absolutely the worst, with Mercedes being very, very close behind, or right there. It ruins every segment for me because I'm always thinking about that. Bivens is with me, I think, because he has liked every one of Tyler's rare tweets since he left.
I don't share the passion, but I agree that was the most questionable. Well, no, I know Killian Dane, but of that, of his round, Tyler Rust, indeed. I had my comments on the Mercedes Martinez issue when it happened. So what do I have here? The Diamond Mine still has a laughable element at the center of it, but I think they are compensating for it with a good entrance. The sound effects, so many entrances have sound effects at the beginning of them that are trying to replicate the broken glass. But this sound effect, I think, is good, especially when it's followed by the whole stable just sauntering out. Like it's this take no prisoners image with Bivens there with his big grin and Wade Barrett on commentary saying he only takes big money matches. That's what he's looking for his clients. And that was something that I said was laughable before because it's about the thing at the center, Roderick Strong, which, yeah. But when commentary's saying it and not Bivens, it's easier to stomach, and they're putting over his thing, and it contextualizes his on-screen character, lends to the managerial role. I was on board with that this time. Match was solid. Now they've got a belt to legitimize the stable. The Creeds will have the tag belt soon enough, and I'll just cross my fingers that we can kind of all quietly agree to forget the cruiserweight belt was ever a thing because it doesn't matter, and just like let Roddy retire it just like 1 week. He won't be wearing it anymore and it'll be fine. But yeah, it's all of that is agreeable, but it's still just like, Roddy is your guy for this? I mean, that, I don't know, what is that? That's the C-3PO rub. Like, he's good at what he does, but you know, C-3PO in The Force Awakens just leaned into frame and he literally like waves like, hey, I'm still here too. And that's his only thing in the whole movie. And it's like, yeah, you know, that's actually okay. And Waller, Grayson Waller, I don't have both names. Oh, Grayson Waller. There it is. I thought he acquitted himself well. He's definitely not doing an Austin Powers thing, but when he said his own name, it was a little bit of, you know, he teed up the sentence and then he went, Grayson Waller. And I was half expecting like a baby, yeah, afterward. So for whatever that's worth. But yeah, I thought he did well enough here that if there was any little part of me, which I don't think there really was, but if there was any little part of me that was like, yeah, let's watch this guy fall on his face, like I am when Trey Baxter's out there, I've picked a new punching bag. I don't think Trey Baxter really deserves it, but I don't know. Maybe
he doesn't at all. But it's still, I love him, and you punch him so hard, and I'm like, I'm not mad, and I can't figure out why.
I'm sorry, he'll be a superhero soon enough.
I'm gonna be punching him.
But yeah, I thought that he did well enough here that even in this post-title win moment and even, you know, challenging the champ for next week, I was like, you know what? Cool. I'm looking forward to it. And I don't feel like it's pedal to the metal too fast. At risk of going long on this one point, but it's a point that I could make about many other things. There's a, like, one half of the storylines that are being told, like B-Fab and Elektra, or I don't know, another one where the names aren't coming to me right now, but it's like, okay, they could have done the match this week, but they're doing it next week. Okay, they could have said the match is next week, but they're not announcing anything yet. So they're not doing the pedal to the metal thing with a lot of their stuff, but then there's other stuff like this where it's like, you know what? I think I'm actually okay with that. And the women's tag team championship match, like, okay, yep, booked for next week. I'm like, you know what? I think in this situation with so many new people, if this is their introduction, that's going to work for me. It's all part of the balance.
All right. We do have a caller on. That is Darrell. Of course, he was already on, but he didn't have the question thing. And I was like, I'm surprised, but we'll see if he jumps on, if he adds a question, if I don't go straight to him. That did indeed happen. Darrell from Georgia, how you feeling tonight?
Can you guys hear me?
I can now.
Okay. How you guys doing tonight? I had you guys on in the background playing for a second, and then I had started doing something. I had forgot I was even watching the show for a little minute. So I'm sorry. I have to give it two more weeks, and then I might have to bow out. I know we say and just saying revamp, but this is more like a like they trying to retcon some stuff and look like this is a restart or. What happened when you have a movie franchise and then you try to redo it over again and start anew, something like that. So this is, I don't know about going backwards. Before I get into any type of rant or anything, I ask a question, and it's a two-parter. The best thing I used to like was about Hit Row and Legado de Fantasma. And I know they're trying to hype up the ladies, and I'm liking that portion. I'm liking what they're doing with that, and I hope they'll keep pushing this out and out until you can have some type of War Games faction, maybe, if you can even get a takeover with how they're doing this right now, but that's another story. And have something like that. Would you guys like to see this keep continuing to get pushed off, and you keep involving everybody, and maybe do some type of War Game type of match on television or something? How would you guys like this finish?
Oh boy, we were talking about this being a War Games match as recently as a few weeks ago. Maybe not even a few. But it sure seems like we're in a different world now. It's harder to imagine TakeOver. TakeOver existed at a time when this was the regular show. But, I mean, so early TakeOver, like Enzo Amore versus Sylvester LaFour was on TakeOver. There was a Mojo Rawley enhancement match on TakeOver. That stuff happened. We might still get TakeOver, but if we do, it's going to be different, and it doesn't feel like this is the version of NXT that would have a War Games match. I just don't know what to expect there. As far as what they're doing with Hit Row and Legado, it's nice, but it doesn't seem like with all the people they're trying to give. You know what this show felt like today was the movie Batman and Robin. They tried to give like 15 people starring roles. So as a result, nobody's got one. And so it's just like it's comfortable in a way, but it still feels like weird and detached and bloated. That's kind of the way I felt. As far as trying to get there with Electra Lopez and B-Fab, it's a mixed bag. We had Electra Lopez versus Anna Scheer. Anna Scheer, kind of a fun bump machine. I feel like I could really like her in that role. Electra almost dropped her leading into her finisher, and that was a little bit scary. I got this clocked at exactly 90 seconds. Lopez, of course, goes over. She gets a little mic time. Santos Escobar tees her up first. It feels like everybody's got their mentor there. And for her, it's, she hit the jackpot because Santos Escobar knows what he's doing out there. So they got a little bit of mic time, and then we went to a brawl. And then basically all the men turn heel, those who aren't already, because they hold back the women. B-Fab acts like she's not going to attack, and then, of course, attacks again. So it's – if this is to be a developmental show, then right now the women of this particular – of these two particular factions are the ones that need the most development, because all the guys from Legado are ready. Santos would never need a bit more seasoning. You could get a little further with the other guys, I suppose, but I like what they're doing as a tag already. I don't know exactly how to attack the question other than that. Tom?
Would you say that they're a bunch of rookies who are paired with pros?
Oh, my. There we are.
I don't really have much on this. Anna Scheer is Ted Price, and Electra Lopez is clearly a work in progress. Okay. That's literally what I wrote. Clearly a work in progress. Okay. I like that Hit Row and Legado and Diamond Mine are factions that have added a female contingent really early on in Undisputed Era. We were suggesting that they might add that. We thought that they might add Tynara Conti when she was having a brief little feud with Nikki Cross that didn't, you know, still insanity Nikki Cross that didn't really get paid off. I think we got our answer as to whether they'll do an intergender War Games last year when we thought that that would happen between The Way and whomever The Way was feuding with at the time. I don't remember. And wasn't that what it was? Whatever it was. Well, I feel like we got that answer last year, and I feel like the landscape has not changed enough to change that answer. Also, I don't think if we are going to get another takeover, or if they change the name, they shouldn't call it Meltdown because that's dumb, but Meltdown is the name that, as to my knowledge, has never been used, and I've always had it in my, like, ever since I was a teenager. I was like, if I made a pay-per-view, I would call it Meltdown because it sounds kind of cool and it's not Taken, most importantly because it's not Taken. Some indie show probably used it, but they shouldn't call it that, but they might call it something different and everybody will freak out, but who cares. Will probably still build to something, but my point is that it will still take place in the Performance Center, where they made the decision as part of this redesign to tear down their ceiling cage structure thing. So you would think that with November coming right up, if they were planning on continuing the War Games tradition, then they would have left that up.
Okay, Nate.
You know, that's a good point. I didn't even really start thinking about like War Games and things like that. Not, and even TakeOver, not even existing anymore as a possibility. Like that kind of broke my brain a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Like I just kind of assumed like, oh yeah, we're still going to get takeovers and things. It just might be a little bit different, but like, I didn't even think of it as a possibility as going away. So like, yeah. Okay. I don't have a whole lot either on these two. Essentially I think that's exactly why they put both of these women with these stables, kind of, you know, rookies with pros. It kind of makes the most sense. Like they are clearly works in progress. However, both of them have, when I say both of them, I'm talking B-Fab and Electra Lopez. They both have enough charisma to be like, to be on TV anyway, and be like actual, working gears, working cogs of these particular stables. But yeah, they definitely need some work in the ring. Electra Lopez, I think, was a little bit more passable than B-Fab, but you know, clearly needs some work. But I like her look. I like her on the mic. She looks like she belongs with Legado. But she definitely needs to have that, you know, her in-ring work step up in order to really look like she belongs there. Same thing with B-Fab. As far as the characters both go, they certainly belong. I don't have a whole heck of a lot more to add to this. Just a couple 2 cents there. My 2.0 cents, I guess.
There you go. I liked that she waited for the bell and then just kind of lazily took off her entrance jacket. That was my favorite thing she did. Hopefully that finisher comes together more cleanly next time, because it was scary for just a millisecond there. Darrell, go ahead.
Okay. And yeah, my next thing, we'll be getting into maybe this, won't see a takeover for a long, long time. And it's over. I know talking about rebrand, restart, or whatever. And Kelly, I know you brought up one of the matches that was on the takeover before about Mr. Real One himself. But I don't even think we can even start. This has digressed further, and then even the first takeover, because I don't even think they can even give you three good matches like what you had on the first takeover, like Cesaro or Sami Zayn with the first match. The Paige versus Emma, which really started bringing people to start looking at the women's division and stuff like that. The true start to the women's revolution, that match right there. Or the ladder match that you had with Adrian Neville and Bo Dallas. So, you know, I just hate how this had me feeling, because my favorite wrestler, everybody know I've been waiting on her to come to this side over the pond for a while, Kaylee Ray, and she has a squash match that really don't do justice with what made her into the best heel in the game that I was saying for a long time, because she was more in longer matches and storytelling. The promo tonight from Toxic, whatever, that was bad. And Mandy Rose have been in the game for over almost six years, going on seven. And if they're going to have them other two following behind her, I hate to see where they would go. I'm just confused and don't know what I should do with this show after being following it for so long and knowing what they had in the past and how they have digressed way past that. And to top this question off, and I know Tom was stating that it's good to see people who not ready for prime time, and I don't mind seeing people who not ready for prime time, but I don't even know if these, with the booking and how they're doing it, which don't even match what they did. This going back to when Johnny Ace was running everything and he was picking bikini models and stuff like that. And they had that horrible developmental time that they had all those years. Could you see a takeover just off of the first two episodes in a long time coming out for this?
So it depends on when that takeover is supposed to be. I wouldn't be surprised if there was no plan right now, like nothing hard in place for when there will be a takeover. Because with all the changes on both sides of the camera, I assume that they are – that's just to play it by ear. I do think there will be more takeover, but they absolutely, as I said before, they're in exposition hell right now. They got to figure out who some of these guys are. They got to figure out which ones are going to step forward and which ones aren't. We are once again in an era like Tom and I know, like NXT 8 years back, where it's sink or swim, and a lot of them sink. It got to a point where they'd only put somebody on TV if they thought they were going to make it. That's not what they're doing right now. There are some of these here who are not going to make it, that are not ever going to see the main roster or get close to it or be pushed on this show. So it's definitely a different time. Kaylee Ray goes over Amari Miller in $135. Amari Miller got a brief inset interview, and I thought acquitted herself well. I thought it was funny that Amari Miller was kind of okay on the mic, and then the one who they gave a talk show next week, Lash Legend. Was not good on the mic. She was very stagey, and she sucked. But whatever. Mm-hmm. Kaylee Ray beats Amari Miller in a minute 35, and then what else did we? Okay, Toxic Attraction is the name of that group. So more or less what I said in my recap is Toxic Attraction, I think, is actually a great name. From a company who gives a lot of bad names to factions, I think this one's good. And the pieces look good on paper, and this promo was decent on paper, but Dolan and Jane are still working their way up, and Mandy Rose's ceiling for mic work is extremely low. I don't know what the other two girls gain from this, because you're not going to sit under the learning tree of Mandy Rose, who's, oh man, I have so many mean things to say, but she's just not good. And I don't understand what they're gaining from this segment, from this grouping, but I do like that creatively, for all the things that are kind of messy on this show right now, Toxic Attraction creatively is one of the better things. The two young ones, Gigi and JC, did challenge Io Shirai and Zoe Stark for the tag team championships. We will get that next week on a show where we actually get three championship matches, which seems a little odd in this brave new NXT, Tom.
So Toxic Attraction, similar, you know, I don't share the overwhelming, overarching,
correct.
How to, the default. Default negative negativity. There, the default negative negativity regarding Mandy Rose. But I think regarding this segment, we're in similar places because the presentation was aces. Like, normally the entrance and then a commercial break and then the segment irks me because it's just a really awkward way to do things realistically. Even though I understand why they do it, it's a weird way to present it. But when you see that entrance and you see those women wearing what they're wearing, sorry, but it's true. And then they cut to commercial. It's like, you know what? I think I'm going to stay tuned. I think I'm not going to say why, but I think I'm interested in seeing what's next. Yeah. Yeah. And then Mandy speaks and it was so flat. Like, I'm probably, it's just because it's like my main talking point with her that she was my favorite on her season of Tough Enough, and I really appreciated how she consciously played a heel character to show that she could do it because she was well aware of the fact that this is a TV show and that, you know, that's how to make it to the finals. And she made it to the Final Four. I enjoyed her on that show for that reason in the context of that show. But I wrote down that if I remember correctly, she did better stuff than this on Tough Enough. That might not be true. That might be an overstatement. Again, context of that show and everything. She was up against ZZ and, you know, a couple of other powder puffs who never.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
what a mess.
That is the correct response. And then the microphone goes over to Gigi and I'm like, okay, here we go. Prove something to me. And give the mic back to Mandy. This was terrible. As she was like this. Hey, again, starting point. I'm not going to like slap it down and say, don't come back. You know, don't take the mic again. This is the starting point. Hopefully she can grow. But she was just like growling into the character. And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, and even for Futurama fans, this might be a deeper one, but the episode 2D Blacktop, I still have not seen the movie that is a reference to, but the professor joins a street gang and each member of the gang has like their issues as to why they joined a gang. And the main one that he latches onto has daddy issues. And the reason why is because her father, she says, well, there was a lot of unspoken verbal abuse. And the whole thing, the whole arc that this one episode character goes on is a pastiche of like these family recovery arcs, you know, a pastiche of something that you might see on the Lifetime channel. And just she says it multiple times throughout the episode, like, well, when I was growing up, there was a lot of unspoken verbal abuse. And that's what Gigi reminded me of here. And then JC is the one who's been making the strangest micro choices with her character. Like she's one of those people that like, I saw her in that battle royal last year and looked her up and was like, hey, I think there's, you know, how much can you judge from getting thrown out like second or third in a battle royal and then scrolling through an Instagram page. But, you know, she gets booked by a lot of, indies in Central Florida. She's held a lot of titles in Central Florida. Maybe there's something here. I'm optimistic. And then she's doing all these weird mannerisms and everything in, you know, what they've shown us so far. And I thought she was the best one here. She was the one that sounded, you know, relative to the other two, the most natural, and had the most of substance to say. So yeah, presentation was great. And then they started talking, and thankfully JC was the final one because it was the most pleasant memory to leave us on. But then speaking of leaving us, then like just the awkwardness of like, okay, because this is a TV show and we're going to cut to a different segment where you're still on the TV, stay in your spot. And so they all just awkwardly stand there for a long amount of time while the crowd is just watching them awkwardly stand there until finally the TV screen fades out and we get to hear from EO and Zoe. And yes, no pedal to the metal, please, but it's been a while. I want some further development on EO and Zoe. This is like the storyline that I'm personally most invested in. I liked that they were still working it last week, even though they were just wedding guests, but they were still working it a little bit. But there's been no progress ever since Zoe tried to learn Japanese, and that was like over a month ago now, I think. So yeah, and then who was it? It was Persia Pirota, if I'm saying that even close to correctly, who approached them, I think. So yeah, all right. Oh, right. Oh, I forgot there were like three other things. Kaylee Ray, I like the presentation so far. I'm all thumbs up on how Kaylee Ray is being presented. Actually, it was I had this thought several other times throughout the show, but it was specifically during the Kaylee Ray match that I thought like, oh, this is really kind of similar to what I've seen of NXT UK. And go figure with her. I'm sure they did a lot of squash matches. Well, I know I saw a couple, but you know, I'm sure they did plenty of squash matches with her over there. It seems like every time I tune in, I'm seeing a squash match for Mako or for Kaylee when she was there or for Aoife or whoever. And the other, oh boy, what was the general point? I had something on that too, but I'm sure I probably mentioned it in several of the other times I've opened my mouth tonight.
I want to say things and respond to some of this, but I just dislike so much of it.
Oh, it was fantasy booking takeover, that is one. All I wanted to say was that that is one that actually would be fun to think about right now. Like every other time we get asked, like, oh, so what do you think is going to be on takeover? Every time it's like, ah, I should probably think about that before we go live. It feels like a chore, but I've enjoyed what these episodes are giving me, what I've been looking for from this television program, enough that being asked that question now, no, I don't have an answer for it off the top of my head, but it's a fun prospect to think about, like, ooh, based on what they're doing, what would be on a big show leading up to this? I do kind of want to sink my brain into that. So if that's an answer for you, at least.
So yes, I was stunned that JC came off best here. And she did for me too, because a few weeks ago I wasn't on the show and I was like, I'm so glad I wasn't, because I thought her backstage segment, not even backstage, but just like a vignette, was the worst thing that I had seen on NXT in a very, very long time. And she did pretty well here, by the, you know, lofty standards set by Mandy and Gigi. Gigi by far my favorite of these three, overall to this point, but I thought that JC did a pretty good job here. Something else I was going to respond to, but I forget the thing. So,
unspoken verbal abuse.
Yes, I get every part of that reference. I was going to say that at the time. I do indeed get that reference. That isn't what I was going to say. It was going to be about, you know, I think it was just going to say Io and Zoe. It seems like there was probably a lot more in the works then, and it's not in the works now because it fell behind the, I think a lot of things that were supposed to happen probably were changed because of the wild change to this show. I believe,
Carmelo,
for instance,
is the, yeah, go ahead.
That we are supposed to be talking about women's champion Dakota Kai, because that storyline only made sense if Dakota won at the end, and now she's not even on TV. Like, literally the best overall woman they have right now is not on TV. It's driving me crazy. Sorry, Tom. Tom, you've talked.
No, it didn't make sense on a 3-week build, but I appreciate where you're coming from. And yes, they were planting the seeds much, much longer than that, but it just didn't feel like the moment.
Longer than a 3-week build. That was that was in place for months. Like, with stepping behind, with her being stepped over by other challengers, that was a longer build than 3 weeks.
It needed more time. A lot of things on NXT need more time, so that's not exclusive to that.
No doubt about that.
But you mentioned that about Zoe, and I'm like, do you have a point there? Because Zoe was getting the EO rub, but now we're at a point where Carmelo Hayes pro to Trick Williams rookie. So, so what does that make Zoe Stark?
Right. What's any of this, Tom? What's any of it? Nate, go ahead.
All right. So you guys talked about a lot of stuff there. The original thing we were talking about was Gigi Dolan, JC Jane, and Mandy Rose, correct?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. I'm just double checking. I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add on this from what you guys said, because I feel pretty much in the same boat. I think Gigi Dolan is certainly my overall favorite, but she definitely did not deliver on the mic either. Mandy, she's okay on the mic. I felt like she actually was a little better than I expected her to be tonight, but that's not saying much. JC definitely came across as the overall best on the mic, which did kind of come across as a little surprising to me too. I think mostly because I put a little bit more on Mandy, considering she's been on the main roster for so long. She should know better by this point. I look at Gigi Dolan, former Priscilla Kelly, I think is more of a veteran than maybe she actually is. I'd have to actually look back at her bio again, but anyway, regardless, I I like the act. I really like the name Toxic Attraction. Yeah, like you said, Kelly, that a lot of times these names have been so fantastic Viking Experience.
Undisputed Era. I mean, like, people give it a pass because they were huge, but it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. It's definitely not good. But I do like Toxic Attraction for this group. It certainly works. But yeah, I don't have a whole heck of a lot more to add on that. There was a couple other fleeting thoughts that I had while you guys were rambling about other stuff, and of course they don't, you know, want to make a reappearance in my brain anymore. So, whatever, we'll move on.
All right, we'll go to one more from Darrell because we're not trying to go 2 hours and 23 minutes like last week.
Understand that. Tom, and yes, Mandy was runner-up in her season to Sarah Lee, who made it a whopping 13 months before she got released from her contract. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But my final question for you guys tonight, and this will be, should they only have one title on this show since they're going back for developmental and maybe not even have tag team titles or maybe one champion, one male champion, one woman champion, or maybe not even champion and just people just fighting for all rights? Because I don't think none of the titles mean anything nowadays, even if you're trying to put it out there, having Tommaso come out there with the rah-rah. Please don't boo, help us out, speech and stuff like that. Do you think they should just downgrade it to no titles at all? I know y'all was saying that about the cruiserweight title, but I feel that way about all of them as of right now.
That's a really interesting question because, again, Tom and I are going through a time where there are very few championships. They got the men's singles championship out of the way relatively quickly. And then the tag championship followed and finally they got around to the women's and, you know, I'd like to hold them accountable for that for taking so long, but they didn't have all that many women. So I guess maybe that they can kind of get away with that. On any wrestling show, the championships are a prop, but on a developmental wrestling show, they're absolutely more of a prop than anything. I would say I could live with them going to no championships other than the fact that if they give away all the championships, then it becomes even more obviously minor league to casuals than it was before. And I think that they would absolutely tune out of a show that that had no championships on it because I think people expect to be able to watch a show with stakes. And yes, the stakes of this show now are who makes it to WWE. They're not who runs NXT. It's who makes it to WWE, which makes it fun in a way, and to me also too bad because I think Raw and SmackDown are mostly not good, and when they get there, I don't watch them anymore for the most part, so that's too bad. But that's not the stakes that people expect. They expect the stakes to be right there in front of them, championships, props, held by these characters that they're invested in, and I would say I could live with most or all of the championships going away, except for the fact that their tenuous hold on USA, I think, would become much worse if they were to do something like get rid of all the belts, Nate.
Yeah, I'm torn because on one hand, I wouldn't mind if they did kind of strip back on some of the titles and just kind of focus on one and more story building and things like that. But again, at the same time, it's what I said kind of at the top of the show, you take this brand that had all of these, you know, established established titles and storylines and stars and things like that, and they'll start stripping it back. And I think it would be – I just think it would be a bad look in a lot of the eyes of the fans. I know for me, if they were to do that, it would kind of almost make the show feel like 205 Live or something like that, just kind of a much lesser show than what I think NXT is even supposed to be. It's not nearly as it's not a third brand like it was anymore. It's a lesser show at this point. But I don't think they want it to be like, you know, a D show like 205 Live or anything like that. I don't know. I don't think I'm necessarily on board with it. I think I would rather have them kind of stick with what they've got. I could maybe see retiring the Cruiserweight title, like Tom kind of alluded to earlier in the night, because it's just the title hasn't felt important for a long time. And even when it did feel important, it was a brief cup of coffee that it felt important. I could see them maybe doing away with that. But otherwise, I think they should kind of leave things alone, at least in the immediate future, to kind of at least, you know, keep that perception up that it's not a D show.
Tom.
So this will surprise absolutely no one who hasn't heard me say it before, but like I watch as from the fan perspective, I watch wrestling TV for the storylines and the drama and the characters, and I watch the pay-per-views for the wrestling. So sometimes it's weird to me to look at NXT, at any era of NXT, and like, this is my show of choice. It's the wrestling show I most identify with in my life. It's, you know, my favorite wrestling show. And I'm like, this is very wrestling oriented. It's really kind of weird that I like this show so much, since, you know, like we talk about, you know, Kelly, you mentioned the wrestling minutes and stuff like that. And like, it's to me, that is neither here nor there. When I hear 29 wrestling minutes tonight, I'm like, that's fine. I was engaged in the segments and I didn't notice that there was less, because that doesn't matter to me. I'll look for the wrestling at the big show. And I think the key to that is just the, you know, I mean, over 100-year history now of professional wrestling, having that prop that you're fighting for, even when there isn't a personal issue, even when there isn't some, you know, poetic Ciampa versus Gargano epic that they're weaving, there still is that symbol of what they're fighting for, even if we know. And even if, like in the 8 years ago, when they would openly say, there was a Kruger versus Woods they did recently, and on commentary they explicitly said that WWE higher-ups were closely watching the match, and they, I don't think they used the word call-up, but they were basically saying, like, yeah, these guys are close to moving up to the main roster, is basically what they were laying out. And we know that's what they're fighting for. And they even, when they introduced the NXT Championship, and they had those really, really good video packages with Cena and Ziggler and I think Booker T and other people, like, talking about what the NXT Championship meant, that's what it came down to. Like, this is the symbol that you are on the stepping stone, and, like, you're going to be the next big thing. We know all that, even if they don't tell us. So do you need the prop? Theoretically, no, but I think you need the prop. I think that is really, it's essential. And something you said reminded me of something else Darrell brought up, and I've heard this, the whole, like, the John Laurinaitis is back in on talent scouting, and this is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, however many months from now, I might kick myself for having naysayed, but I don't think we are on the verge of going back to bikini models, because the wrestling landscape has changed enough that fans demand more out of the wrestling up and down the card. I genuinely don't know. The fan approach to WWE and AEW is so different. And what fans are willing to criticize or see for the writing on the wall or whatever is so different, that I don't know if we did go back to bikini models and them not getting many wrestling minutes and so on and so forth. Like even when Ivory is trying to carry him or even when Paige is trying to get her stuff in, would we be on the verge of another Give Divas a Chance hashtag? Or would it just be like, well, whatever, because, you know, Britt Baker only gets a few minutes on Dynamite anyway. I don't know. Maybe that's a bad example. I just know that it's a running thing with them that they only have a women's division for the appearance of it, because they would get crap online if they didn't. But there's no real huge outcry. So I don't know. I just don't think we are leading down that road again. I don't think we can. Maybe one day that will rear its bikini clad head once more, but I don't think we're there anytime soon.
I hope you're right. But I thought that it was very backwards that Toxic Attraction walked by Hayes and Williams and they got all thirsty like they've never seen a woman before.
Yeah, that's fair.
And they're like, they're fine. And I'm like, yeah, one third of them are, oh, okay. I'm not doing this. Oh my God. Okay. So there's three more matches on the show. And we're not going to take time with them really, but there's a little bit, because almost every match on this show had extracurriculars afterwards. And having that many extracurriculars on one show is a little much. Could have spread some of this out. I really, really wish they had. That is one of my bigger issues with this. Last week, I thought the pacing was fine because we were throwing a lot of new stuff here. This week, I thought the pacing was no good. I'm starting to get some of these guys mixed up. And if you just put one in front of me and the announcers don't say their name, I'm going to have a little bit of trouble at this point. So the other matches we have were Dante Chen versus Trey Baxter. Dante Chen had a little bit of trouble with a reverse on a roll-up, which I thought was no good. But he wins in 58 seconds with a finisher that looked kind of cool, and they said they've never seen before. I've seen it 1,000 times in New Japan, but it is indeed a good finisher. And Cameron Grimes versus Joe Gacy. Joe Gacy got some mic time beforehand. They're going wildly different with him. He's still got the serial killer name, but they're making him heel by way of being a nice guy who doesn't hate the world. They're going super far with the this is a safe space, whatever, and then having him be a hypocrite. I don't know. I think this is dead on arrival. But Cameron Grimes beats him in 2:47. Joe Gacy wants to give him a handshake after the match. Grimes is not having it, and but Gacy hugs him anyway and then just leaves. So this match actually reminded me more of old NXT than anything, where guys would get their characters and then they'd go out there and get slaughtered. Tom and I in 8 years back are just passing the point where Enzo and Cass were going out there. They were getting responses, but they were getting beaten basically every match. They were working on character stuff while they were not getting pushed. So very strange to see, but that is kind of harkening back to those days. We also got Odyssey Jones versus Two Enhancements. If they were named, I didn't catch it. Andre Chase is in a mini feud with Odyssey Jones. He cut a promo on him. Well, no, he didn't have a promo. There was a vignette where he was teaching a class, and one of the classmates brought up his loss to Odyssey Jones, and he completely lost it. And so there you go. Two of the young guys actually feuding with each other, which we don't have a lot of. The one other thing Trey Baxter did was he was backstage after his loss, and they acknowledged, I always think this is a mistake, but they acknowledged his relationship with Cora Jade, his real-life relationship, and she said something as she was just trying to be helpful, like, you're okay, you're a superhero, and of course he latches on to the word superhero, so we are going to see him playing a superhero real soon for some reason. I mean, he's dating Cora Jade, so he's already my hero, but a lot of people's hero. but that is what he is doing. And so there we got three matches, and that gets rid of most of it, I think. Tom?
Yeah, I was surprised that they referenced the – well, not referenced. They just suddenly put on screen the real-life relationship of Cora Jade and Trey Baxter. And she said – and I don't know if this is true or not – but she said, how long have we been together? And they're young. Everything is relative. But, you know, like it not being any of my business, I was under the impression that it was a pretty new relationship and they had gotten together after their signing, relatively recent signing. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe they're high school sweethearts. Maybe they go back further than that. I don't know. But yeah, it was like, hey, we're going to present you with something real. And then we're going to have them say something that you, I don't know, that you have to take in character because it's none of your business. You don't really know what their real life relationship is like. And then we're going to have him say that he's going to become a superhero, which I don't want to crap on because I like Nikki ASH. And, you know, so I think that a superhero can work in today's wrestling world. But yeah, it is a little bit like, I don't know. I also like really wasn't liking Trey Baxter at all. So, you know, sure. Give him something new. And the match, that was the Dante Chen match. And this guy was signed as part of that 2019 Shanghai tryout where they got another handful of talent. And then they got put on hold because 2020 happened. And so it's just one of those people that I hadn't even learned by name yet, but I was curious to see what he had, and I don't think he got to show off what he had here because this was the NXT special. This was the, you know, the guy who's going over, takes all the offense and then does something at the end, and what he did at the end didn't even work out all that well. So hope he gets another shot on TV soon so I can reevaluate. And then speaking of didn't have anything going on, barely even, I don't know, Andre Chase, I liked, it seems to be the one thing that people didn't care for about the wedding, but I liked him saying, so, you know, somebody said, just cut to the chase. And then he stands up and goes, did somebody say Chase? Which is so dumb. And I understand why people didn't like it, but I was like, oh, now I'm going to remember that guy. And that's kind of funny. And now I'm kind of waiting for the next time that somebody uses that word in an idle way backstage. And he just pops out, did somebody say Chase? So I didn't expect that he was suddenly going to have his own thatch can situation going on backstage. And I don't know if that's really the direction I wanted that going in. But in the realm of the sketch comedy style segment this was, I think it was okay. And it has the trappings of something like Thatch's Thatch Can did. It has the trappings of something that can improve if they are – ambitious is too strong of a word, but if they want to do something with it and they want to develop something out of this Andre Chase University scenario that they have now established, they absolutely can do that with what they set up tonight. But then you look at Thatch's Thatch Can, and they did not do that. They started it off at a complacent place where they were just like, no, this is what it's going to be the whole time. And that is the way that it was the whole time. By the way, yeah, the like you never saw his face guy that was always getting the holds put on him by the students. That was Cal Bloom. You could tell from the hair. I mentioned that a couple of times in Thatch's Thatch Can. But that ties into the Odyssey Jones match. Odyssey Jones, a guy who I have been very high on. And I didn't think this was his best showing. Didn't look super fantastic. I think a lot of that was also the fact that he was against, it was such a quick Chiron, Kerry Millman and Darren Chiappetta, two guys I've never seen before in my life. No idea who they are.
I kept calling them the Milkman and the Chipmunk.
There you go. Don't know which is which, so I don't know. I'll just say it was the white guy. The white guy, like, wanted to be James Ellsworth or something, and he was way too cartoonish. And that's not what I'm looking at when I said that Jones didn't have his best showing here, but that certainly did not help. And this was the other one that I couldn't think of earlier, Odyssey Jones versus Andre Chase. I just assumed they would do that match today, but they did not, and they are not rushing it. So cool there. And there was one more, Gacy and Grimes. Okay. So Kelly, I absolutely see where you're coming from. And that whole thing ran through my mind as well. Like, okay, of course they're going, it's like, you know, the vegan bad guy, you know, like, just because it's something that aggravates you and you like to eat steaks covered in ketchup, you know, that character becomes the bad guy in your TV show. But I am willing to give this version of Gacy a chance. It's yet another person who I just did not care for, you know, version one of Gacy. So the version 2.0, I'll give it a chance, because I don't think this is him just being a nice guy. I think this is him being, he's exuding toxic positivity. You're going to look, if he really wants to play the character, he will delete his Instagram and start a whole new one that's just like inspirational quotes. And I don't know, like, it's going to be aggravating how positive this guy is.
I'm with that, absolutely, because toxic positivity is like an underrated, horrible personality trait. I just wonder if they have the brain power to pull it off. I really hope they do. Because, I mean, like, they might not recognize it when they see it, because, like, if you look at John Cena's Twitter feed, that's essentially all it is.
Oh, man, yeah. And a lot of, like, if you're not really listening to what he was saying, which I guess, I don't know, maybe I wasn't. What the hell was he really saying? It really was just like a cavalcade of hot button terms like safe space being thrown out there. Like, you know, clearly somebody's been on social media a couple times and they were like, oh, what's this crap? Oh, you know, and then here we are. But I liked how
that
he
voice
worked
is correct.
Gimmick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I liked how he worked the gimmick into the match. That moment where he had to like collect himself. I love character work in the ring. And you know, that in and of itself put this way over what he did not impress me with in the breakout tournament. And I liked the post match. I liked him going for the handshake, and Grimes was like, no, I'm in wrestling. I know what that is. I'm not going to do that. And then, I thought that was all very amusing. So, this one is going to get a wait and see from me.
I love the hindsight placement of the breakout tournament, because we're like, oh, they got to get eight people over at once. NXT's like, eight? Yeah. Just zero to the end of that, baby.
Yeah.
Hold my beer.
Yes, indeed. Nate?
All right, so we got a lot of squash matches here. I guess, the only one that I really – Grimes and Gacy, you guys pretty much covered everything there that I was going to talk about. Dante Chen, I really like the presentation of this guy. From the overall presentation, his attire, his entrance attire, his entrance music especially, I really, really dug that. A lot of in WWE as a whole, ever since CFO kind of in WWE parted ways, a lot of the entrance music has seemed very blah. This seemed, I mean, it was still kind of generic electronic music, but it was energetic and it kind of caught my ear, and I enjoyed it. I liked it. And I think it really fit his character as well. I want to see more of this guy. You know, he seemed very energetic, very explosive. And I certainly liked him. And the Trey Baxter thing, we're just real quick talking about like the superhero. It's like, I'm okay with doing a superhero gimmick, but like, you already have one superhero gimmick right now. You get Nikki A.S.H. or A.S.H. Like, I just, yes, sure, she's not on NXT, but like, I don't know. I think that's kind of weird. You're now going to have potentially two superhero gimmicks going on in the same sort of universe, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Is what it is, a nitpick, I guess. If he can pull it off, then great. If not, then hey, we'll see what happens. The other match that we had was that match between Odyssey Jones and Kerry Millman and Darren Chepeta, however you pronounce that, which, you know, like Tom said, I don't think this was Odyssey Jones' best performance, best showing either. He's still clearly green in the ring. He's got a lot of work, you know, to do to kind of get to where I think he needs to be in the ring. Obviously, this is developmental, so this is the place he's got to be for that. But what I think is really going to get him over is his charisma. He's got charisma for days. He's great on the mic. Just even in the ring, his ring presence is good. I mean, he's got a million-dollar smile. People just seem to like him. He's just a very likable personality. So I think he's going to be okay. But I do feel like he's got some work to do, you know, in the ring. But I did like the fact that he's taking these two munchkins around and just throwing them around the ring. It was great. I like that. That's the type of squash match that I want to see. But yeah, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add to the other one. So yeah, I think that's it.
All right, so we got a few other segments that were non-wrestling segments. We got another Tony D'Angelo segment. It's been a while since they presented a stereotype to this degree, and that's saying a lot because this company is this company. It makes me laugh, and not in a good way. It's just so one-dimensional. Von Wagner, he hates tires, and he beats him up with sledgehammers. Raquel and the Monet brand ran into each other and then Lash, I've forgotten the name already, Lash Legend showed up as well to very presentationally. It sounded like she was reading. I hope that this goes better and expect it to go better, actually, when they're sometimes with neophyte actors with one or two lines, they sound very rehearsed, and then you throw them out there and they know what they got to hit, but there's a lot of stuff that there's a lot of off the cuff, whatever that they have to do and just stay in their character. I'm expecting better in the ring. So hopefully that happens. We also got Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs in a barroom brawl. They showed us the footage from this apparently viral battle that they had in a brawl with some guys. The best part of this horrible segment by far was the fact that there are a lot of other people in the bar and they're looking at the fight, but they're not reacting, which is, it made it look like the fakiest video I have ever seen. This was worse than porn because it was pretty bad. If you're an extra, we don't expect much. But react to the thing that you are looking at. Jensen and Briggs in this segment were fine, but the segment itself was pretty stupid. So, yes, that's all the non-wrestling stuff, Nate.
All right, so the Briggs and Jensen bar fight, that was definitely pretty dumb. I like these two guys together. I like the gimmick. A couple good old boys just, you know, kicking ass. But yeah, it was a little, the whole segment itself was just, I think it was just too overly produced to just not my cup of tea. Let's see the other, you had the Briggs Jensen bar fight. And then what was the other segment? I don't know how I spaced on this already.
There was Tony D'Angelo and Von Wagner attacking the tire. Yeah,
right. So Von Wagner attacking the tire was also kind of weird, like trying to show how tough you are, I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure I'm sold on this character. I'm gonna give it a chance. I did enjoy him last week, you know, in that Fatal 4-Way match. Obviously not the most polished in the world, but I did enjoy what we saw out of the former Cal Bloom.
The audience dumped on him last week, so I think a segment like this was necessary, where he said, I could complain about it or I could do the work. He's got to endear himself to the crowd now because he should not have been thrown to the wolves like that.
No, I agree with you there. So yeah, this definitely kind of helps that character development, and hopefully to kind of get us behind him a bit more. You know, and I feel like that's even, you know, and this is a little bit of a derailment here, but that's kind of even, you know, with Bron Breakker, I think that's kind of something they're going to need to do with him too. I don't think the crowd's necessarily not behind him, but again, just throwing these guys out, right out there to the Wolves in these high profile spots. I think that there could definitely be, again, some, you know, fan resentment and pushback there. So I definitely like these segments, you know, the Von Wagner segment, you know, something like that to, you know, kind of advance these guys. I would love to see them bring back, the name of these, it was almost like the shoot promo, backstage promo. What do they call them? I want to call them Breaking Point, but I know that's not it.
Oh, yeah. By the time they ended, they were, by the end, they were so,
they were so not, like what they used to be.
Prime target.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was looking for. I would love to see some more of those type videos, and vignettes, video packages for these guys. And I'm talking like those first few Prime Target videos, not kind of what they came to be is more of like a storyline thing. Even I guess the other ones kind of sort of were too, but you know what I mean? I'd like to see something like that out of for a lot of these newer guys to get us kind of more on board with them. And then the Tony D'Angelo segment, I'm like I said, I think I said this with Greg. Was it Greg on what? I forget. I think it was Greg Balloon Wrestling Night in America talking about Tony D'Angelo. And like, I'm on board. I like it. I'm Italian, even with the last name Lindbergh, mostly Italian. So I kind of like the whole Italian stereotype gimmick here. You know, I've always liked like Sopranos, Mafioso, The Godfather type thing. It's kind of got that feel to it. I'm on board with it, but I want to see what happens when he actually, like, is this going to translate to the ring? I think the vignettes are okay. They're a little cheesy, a little campy. I have a feeling that he's going to probably get a bit of a mixed reaction because I think either there's going to be some people like me that kind of like that Godfather, you know, type of a character, like mafioso type of a character. And there's going to be people that are just like, nope, this is dumb. This is stupid. This is like older and whatever been done. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what's actually going to happen when he gets in front of a crowd, when he gets in the ring, and if it's actually going to translate to the general audience. But so far, I'm on board with it. I'm on board with it. See what happens, when we actually get him in the ropes, between the ropes.
I wonder if I'd feel that way if I had a super strong background, but I'm like, I'm pretty English. I'm pretty Swedish. I've got a decent amount of Irish, but I don't have a thing that I relate so much to that I would have a strong feeling on. It just seems like this is so obvious to me and not in the greatest of ways. But I don't know. Some of what I've seen, I saw some people fawning over this. I actually occasionally look at Reddit on wrestling just to see what they're saying over there. And they were talking about this and this guy was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I love Johnny Stamboli and I'll love this. And I'm like, yeah, there's a guy who drew a lot of money. I don't know. We'll see what his ceiling is. Right now, there's so many people they're trying to push. I couldn't pick him out of a one-man lineup, but I guess we'll see. John?
Go ahead, Nate.
All I was going to say was I don't think he's going to have much more of a ceiling than, the North American title, picture. Upper mid-card.
Wow, that's lofty for what we've seen so far.
I would be shocked if he got there.
Yeah, I don't think – and that's on the high end. I don't think we're going to see him much higher than that. But that's all I was going to say.
Yeah, I think his ceiling is Fantasio.
When we were talking about the title situation that Darrell brought up, completely forgot the North American title was a thing. When Nate said North American title, I was like, whoa, he's talking to main roster call-up already. Whoa, okay. But
I've been trying to – oh, God, it's Swerve.
It's Swerve.
I was trying to remember for kind of a while because he's been involved in stuff, but it's not involving the championship.
Yeah. So with Tony D'Angelo, since we're there, I've just decided that that I want it to be an on the waterfront type thing where, you know, different city, but he keeps saying that his relatives guided him to go where the money is, and he's going to NXT, which, yes, is hilarious, Malcolm Bivens. But I want him to be presented as a really good wrestler who can get it done, but then he's got to take the fall in the end because that's what he's being paid to do, and his family's making money off of betting against him.
Yeah, just go Digstown with this thing. Have you seen Digstown?
No, I thought On the Waterfront was a really good
one. Wow! Digstown was probably referencing On the Waterfront, but like Digstown does it in a kind of funny way. A good moment in a bad movie.
Okay, so Kelly, the Briggs and Jensen video, did that remind you of anything from 8 years back?
D-squared, yeah, of course. And I was going to actually say that before I threw to you, and I was like, of course these things always come around because, like, this particular brain trust can only think of like five different gimmicks.
There was another one. I don't remember. There's another
one. D-squared, by the way, folks, is Garrett Dillon, who is the real life son of Kris Kristofferson and is not as pretty. So he went into wrestling, and Dash Wilder, who, you know, so that was D-squared. And, they took Dylan off TV for quite a while, but he'll be back at some point in NXT 8 years back
with some kind of health issue because he comes to the ring guzzling barbecue sauce.
Right.
It doesn't sound real, but that's what he did. And and it was Scott Dawson, for the record, Scott Dawson. But
Now that they've changed
their names, I don't know who's who anymore.
Yeah, which one's Dash? Which one's Dawson?
Dash and Cash, right? Dash and Cash rhyme, and that's the same guy. Is that right?
Or they're different guys, and that's why I'm confused.
Are they the same guy?
it's the exact same good old boy gimmick, down to the fact that they met in a fight. These guys, Dawson and Dylan, met in a fight. It's just that that fight wasn't in a bar. It was at the CMA Awards. Which was such a funny little tidbit that, you know, Tony Dawson just like throws out on commentary during one of their matches. But the funnier thing about it,
I wish they had the budget
to send Sylvester LaFour because that's the other thing. Sylvester LaFour, the legit French guy who's doing a parody of a French guy, was their manager for some reason. This is just for anybody who's not VIP, if you're still listening at this point. And the funniest thing about it all is that they were actually really good. I mean, nobody who has watched Scott Dawson's career is going to be super surprised by that. But, like, even Garrett Dillon, in the context of this tag team, was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm not into the gimmick, but these matches are very entertaining.
And they had a French manager? That's weird.
Yeah, he always
an overwhelmingly French manager.
Like I remember him, but I don't remember that act. I think that might be just before my time.
And he would exaggerate his own voice more every time he said it. And so would the announcers. Yeah, it was a wonderful brief time.
Fantastic.
Yep. Yep. But in this case, we've got Ben Buchanan and Josh Briggs. And Ben Brooks Jensen still has to prove himself. Josh Briggs is working his way. I don't know. We haven't seen enough for me to say he's working his way back into my favor, but that's what he has to do after what we've seen from him based on what my expectations for him were. I think I said hopes before. That's too strong. But my expectations were much higher, and to the point where when he got in this tag team, it's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense after what you showed in the breakout tournament and in whatever the match was that he did after that, like something where he got beat by somebody. Carmelo Hayes, I don't know. But yeah, I will, if there is something there, like there was with D squared 8 years ago, I will have to look past the gimmick to appreciate it.
So there you go. And I also can't remember who beat Josh Briggs, but I think it was one of the existing non-breakout
I don't know, maybe it was LA Knight or something. Actually, that LA Knight got
Grimes?
Josh Briggs to beat up Grimes.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, or tried to. Oh, and the only other one of these I was going to comment on was the Ikem and Jiro thing, and I probably shouldn't because everybody is...
Oh, I forgot to write that down. Yeah.
It's the only other one of these that I actually have a comment on. None of the other ones really, you know, inspired much out of me, but this one didn't either, but it's just that everybody loves this guy, and all I'm here to say is just I don't get it. So everyone can murder me later at Tom Staupe on Twitter, but I don't get it. He was like, if I had a least favorite part of the wedding, it was his bit. And this video, the style strong showing off the jackets, I don't get it. I have not enjoyed this man on my TV, but literally everyone else seems to have him as like the high point of the show. So just throwing that out there. I don't know.
You have no soul, Tom. You have no soul.
Unknown, born unknown. Died 2021. Murder was the case when Tom died, because when Ikem and Jiro showed up, he literally saved this god awful frickin' show for me. I'm Kelly Wilson. Yep, that's as close as I've ever gotten on this show. No, I said it once about JBL. Kelly Wilson. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games. I created a game, a card game, a couple of years ago called Fun Dead, and it was just picked up regionally by stores. It will be sold in stores. Finally, this was all supposed to happen before COVID, but then COVID happened, and nobody gave a shit anymore about board games, which does make sense, but sucks for me. But yes, now my game Fun Dead sold in stores in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Specifically games by James. Tom, who are you?
I'm at Tom Staupe on Twitter, a guy who is very happy to hear that. A guy who has played Fun Dead with its creator and has a copy of it on my shelf and has photoshopped photos of me in the game. I'm very happy to hear that news. And it's also weird that... I don't know, like the production and in-person purchasing, sure, but I became more interested in board games over the course of the pandemic because I was at home with my family, and so we got into a couple. But
board games did just fine, but I was supposed to meet them at large conventions where these pitches happen. So these obviously pitch games did not exist for a while.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess, I don't know. That's a different tangent. We can have that after we stop recording. But at Tom Staupe on Twitter is where I have all of my links. When I say that, it's the tweets, but I also have the link to my blog where all of my links are. And those links now include Willing Creatures on YouTube, my Dungeons and Dragons group. We have started recording our sessions. It's a cool jumping on point now. I will be honest, it will be a better jumping on point later, and I'll let you know about that when it happens. But if you want to get on early, it's high drama right now. We have a lot of fun, but it's also very high drama as told by, yes, the players as D&D goes, but as orchestrated and conducted by a very, very good dungeon master who has put a lot of thought into this world and does a really wonderful job of laying it all out for us to have fun with. So Willing Creatures on YouTube is where you can subscribe to that. Links at Tom Staupe on Twitter.
Nathaniel McFreeze, what the hell did you ever create?
Oh, well, you know, a few things. I do a little side project called Dungeons and Dragons, which you guys, we've talked about here and there, where I take a look at therapeutic intentionality in role-playing games. So it's a little bit of a tie-in with what Tom's doing here. So if you guys want to check that out, natelindberg.com, there's links to that show. There's links to this show. There's links to my hits and misses. There's links to a bunch of stuff. Just go to natelindberg.com. You can see what I do.
All right, folks, this is Kelly Wells saying Brandy and Coke. I mean, at best, just okay, but I don't think it's even that. We'll see you in 7. Cheers. All right.